The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Weekly Connect. This is the show that is quite literally all about you. Yes, your stories, your life in your words. Thank you so much for joining me. It is Stephen Scott with you here once again. Hello. Coming up this week, we hear two very different experiences of losing your vision. But the reaction to such a difficult time might not be what you expect from these two. That's on the way. Plus, we also learn about a new radio show here on RNIB Connect Radio, all about blind people living in Wales, and find out how you can get involved in making consumer products more accessible, thanks to a national charity. That's all coming up.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, despite what we are told regularly, losing your sight doesn't mean the end of your life. For some, it actually means readjusting to still be able to enjoy the things that you might have done when you had full vision, as well as perhaps learn a few new things. That's definitely the case for Clark Reynolds, who got in touch with us to tell us that he tried to make sure his vision loss doesn't get him down. Well, thank you so much for joining me here on the line, Clark.
That's okay. Nervous.
You're nervous?
Nervous, yeah. It's a proper interview. I've never done a proper interview before.
Oh, it's not a proper interview. It's just me you're talking to. It's just me, and I won't tell you how many others. listen, it's really good to have you here, Clark, and I'm really glad you came on. Because your story interested me, because we hear a lot of stories in the news these days of blind and partially sighted people, usually people who've lost their sight later in life, and they go on to do great things. And it's something which always intrigues me because, you know, I was born with a visual impairment, and I don't think I've ever done anything particularly extraordinary other than perhaps this job. But, you know, I try to see myself, and I kind of want to see myself as you know, just an average Joe guy who's just getting on with his life. But what's interesting is that when people tend to lose their sight later in life, the experience is a little bit different than that, and that's certainly what you've found, isn't it?
Well, it's weird because I say I was born with one bad eye, so, and I've gone through life thinking it as a disability. So I've, you know, got my driving license, got my degree because I do art. You see, so I've got a degree in model making, so like highly technical. Got to use your eyes for detail, that kind of stuff. So the transfer over to like the shock was, I thought I'd lose my sight in my 50s or 60s. And then when I found out 2 years ago that, oh, I've got RP, which I didn't know I had, that was the shock. I was like, oh. And then obviously when I lost my job, because obviously it's a highly detailed profession, I was working as a dental model maker at the time, that was the hardest part. But I say I've always had art in my life. So for me, art has always been a constant because I've had bad kidneys and bad liver. No, I don't drink, I don't smoke, it's just bad luck, really. But I've always had art. So, and now, as I'm going blind, I'll still have the art. I'm hopefully going to set up classes for the visually impaired, do sensory art therapy. That's the plan.
Now, what was interesting about reading your story, and, you know, so people understand, I received a text document from you, actually, which kind of told your story. And it's something which we hope might get published in the RNIB Connect magazine, if it hasn't already, in the next issue. And I certainly hope it does, because I think it'd be interesting for people to read. The reason that I read it was because, and the reason you wrote it, I guess, is because one of the experiences you talked about was getting up there in the sky and jumping out of a perfectly serviceable plane.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I've always wanted to do it before I was 40. I mean, I was terrified of heights, don't like flying. But it was just when you see it on TV or just, you can't explain it until you've done it. It's the most surreal thing, sensory overload, even for someone who can see, should definitely do it. It was so quiet. I mean, lucky we had the perfect weather. There was no wind. It was literally the perfect day. And it was once that parachute was pulled, it was so quiet. But the free fall was the scary part, 125 miles an hour.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Yeah, because obviously in your mind, you want to put your hands out, because that's how you're trained, isn't it? When you fall, trip, you automatically want to put your hand out or grab something.
Yeah.
You know, and you can do that. So your mind obviously plays that trick on you. And then so you panic in a way. I mean, all the air was rushed out of me, and I just couldn't breathe, exhale because of the air that was coming in. So once that initial, it felt like for only about 3 seconds, but I was free falling for a minute, and then the guy literally patted me on the shoulder, and then the chute went up, and that was it.
Wow. Now, you said you've got RP.
Yeah.
So have you any sight left at all?
So basically, I've got no sight like in my right eye, but I've lived with that for 30 years.
Mm.
And then in the left eye, 2 years ago, just now it's like a black shadow, and it's starting to creep in further now. So it's almost like it's almost bisected my eye diagonally. So I've got like a black triangle in the far left corner, and it's gradually going that way. So I see, but you know, you have to move your eye around to get that sweet spot in a way. But it's obviously more difficult because obviously with the art thing. So I'm trying to do sensory overload. So for instance, if I was painting an orange, I would like smell the orange, feel the orange, have something playing in the background of someone chopping and squeezing the orange. That's the kind of sensory overload I want to achieve later in my life.
The reason I ask you about that was because I was kind of interested to know what you saw when you were skydiving, because what interests me is you said you were scared of heights for a long time, and you know, I wonder if you would have done this before you lost the majority of your vision. I guess the answer is probably not. You wouldn't have done this before, would you? Because
more. My partner was going to get it for me for my 40th birthday. As a present, I've always wanted to do it. So,
do you think she was trying to tell you something, or?
Well, the only reason I wanted to have the opportunity was because through the Losing My Sight magazine. If it wasn't for them, I would have done it maybe a couple of years down the line, and I would have had probably less sight than I would have now. So I'm glad I've done it now, where I could still see a bit. Cause it, basically, how I see is to people who can see. I explain when they go underwater. Like when they go to the swimming pool and they open their eyes, and they get that blurry fuzziness, and sometimes they get a shard of light streaming through the water and, you know, catching the eye. That's how I see 24/7.
Right. Okay. And as the years go by, let's be brutal about it, I guess, it's not going to get any better, is it?
No. I mean, it's amazing. Like, I haven't felt depressed at all. I've kind of like accepted it quite quickly. I said I've joined groups. I play blind cricket for Hampshire and Sussex. I'm starting blind football next Monday. I'm part of this group called Losing My Sight, which I did the charity dive for, Skydive 4. And we do activities for working age people. So we've been canoeing, kayaking, sailing, archery, rock climbing. There's plenty of things come up. I think we're going to try and do a Welsh trip next year, where we're going to go on that Snowdonia dip line.
So you'd keep him busy.
I'd be more busy losing my sight than I had when I had sight. I've had more of a social life going blind than I had when I had fully sighted. So, yeah.
Why do you think, you know, whenever we hear about sight loss, and it's interesting because both of us probably have a very different view on the world to others, that's why I think this is a really interesting conversation. Because, you know, I come at it, like I say, from the point of view of always having a condition. You've come at it from losing your sight over time, but yet both of us haven't sunk into depression. And that's not to say that nobody else will or is, and it's not to say that that's wrong to feel that way or anything like that. But it's interesting, isn't it, that some of us don't go down that route. Why do you think that is with you? Is it your nature, do you think? Is it just the way you look at life?
It could be, because obviously I had bad kidneys when I was in my early teens, so I left school. I had to leave school due to medical reasons. I was 15 at the time. And scary time. We rushed up to hospital up in London, 15-year-old kid. That's just a little sense from that, really, just that positive attitude from there. So I fought back, basically. I had no GCSEs. I had an A in art, and I fought back to get an MPQ, a diploma, and a Bachelor of Honours art degree. So, all the knockbacks I've always had in my life through health problems has made me stronger.
I think that's what a lot of people forget, isn't it? That, you know, when someone, let's be honest, when people hear about even the thought of losing sight, they panic, they worry. You know, people who have perfect sight worry about it. They fear sight loss. Mm. And I guess what we all try to say is, you know, it's not something to fear. It's an adjustment like anything else in life. It's not the greatest experience on earth. Nobody wants it. I don't want to live like this. I'm sure you don't want to live like that.
No, I mean,
but you have, what else can we do? There's no, you know,
just have to adapt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's certain things that obviously I'm a huge film fan, so I haven't been to the cinema since I was diagnosed because I just didn't like that audio description and the screen. So for me, that was the biggest hurdle I had to overcome. And now taking in audio description on TV and stuff, so I'm just getting used to that now. But that's the only thing. And it wasn't most annoying. It's old. I used to read a lot. I used to read like 8 books at a time. And so I've got the audio books I get from the RNIB library, which is great. And you know, I like all that. But it's not the same as looking at a page and like taking it in your mind.
And that is the bits that sometimes great, isn't it? It's those things that you think about and you say, well, I used to do this. Mm. I can now do that. I mean, I can read and you can read and, you know, but we're doing it by audio. We're listening.
Yeah.
You know, and that's fine. But like you say, it's not the same. It's not the same thing. It is difficult when we talk about sight loss because everybody's got a different experience of it. There are some people, I've met blind people who just don't care. They tell me, you know, I don't care, I'm blind, so what? Some people cannot get over it at all. And I think it's acknowledging that in a sense, isn't it? Because, you know, we hear charities talk about it in such a negative way sometimes. And I think it's important that we try and say, well, yeah, okay, it is difficult, but not to use a pun, but sometimes there is a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, and that light at the end of the tunnel can be things you've found that you might not have done before.
No, but I mean, what I found, with, you know, at my age, I mean, mid-30s, is I think sight loss, unless you've got that long cane, which I just had only 2 months back. Before that, I just had the simple cane, and people just didn't pay attention at all. And even with the long cane, people still try and play chicken with you on the pavement. I think, and, you know, in a busy place. And I think people, I think it's an invisible disease or condition or disability, how you want to call it. And it just sometimes, I know RNIB did that, the advert the other day with different sight losses on the TV, which is really good. But I just feel, you know, when you go, for instance, when we go to London on the Underground, you don't see any posters saying, you know, we're a bloke with a white cane or, you know, something like that, and people fully sight can say, you know, because that's the worst. I think London is oblivious to people with blind conditions. I think,
you know, I think they're oblivious to each other as well. In some ways, I think that might just be a London thing. But it's interesting. I wonder what your thoughts are on acceptance of sight loss, and I think that's a very dangerous word in some ways because, you know, I, as I say, I've had this condition since day one, and yet I still feel I'm accepting it every day. Is it about, though, a bit more than that? Is it about, in some ways, not just accepting it, but actually, in some respects, just letting it be and realising that, you know, instead of getting frustrated about not being able to read, you know, start listening to audiobooks. Instead of being frustrated about not being able to watch TV and movies, accept that there's audio description, that there are ways round it, and it might not be perfect, but, you know, the world isn't perfect in some ways, and, you know, we have to adjust to what's available, and there is a lot more available today in 2017 than there was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years
ago. That's it. I mean, I'm not techno-minded, but there is a lot of technology around there for people. I mean, I still have my independence. I still go out on my own. I mean, there's great bus routes where we are, which is great. And they're getting the new buses now, but there has to be mandatory, so the bus stops where, you know, it'll tell you. But I have a good memory, which always helps. But I mean, obviously, the other downer is obviously I've got a 3.5-year-old daughter, and you know, I try to explain to her that Daddy's got bad eyes and try to change her and things like that. She has to keep still. But the worst thing as well is she's just been diagnosed with cerebral palsy. So that's a massive thing on my shoulders as well. I suppose my partner's got to look after my daughter as well as worry about me when I'm going out. So, And I tried to tell her, you know, I can do it. I just think she worries too much. She worries for the both of us, which, I try not to think about it, in fairness. If I thought about it, maybe that's when the depression would kick in more.
Yeah, I suppose that was my next question. Do you have down days? Do you have just moments where you just think, oh?
It's been horrible the last 7 months because we were evicted from our property up in Kent, a landlord sold the property. So I moved down with my mum in Portsmouth to, you know, help the support from the family as I knew would need it, you know, with me losing my sight. And obviously, I know there's a housing crisis, don't get me wrong, but we've had no support from any of the councils at all. We've had a key worker, and apparently my disability and my daughter's disability is not a worthy cause for them to prioritise us on housing. So, but lucky enough, I've just had a friend whose their houses came up for rental, and we're going to move in next month. But we've all been living in one room for the last 8 months, which has been quite traumatic.
Mm, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, some of people like to sort of put sight loss in a box, but, you know, sight loss comes with friends, and, you know, those friends can be the other things in your life that go on. I mean, like you say, your daughter, your housing situation, all these other things, real life that goes on round about it, that you have to cope with. And, you know, you have down days, but not always necessarily attached to the sight loss, but it can play a part. It's everything. But you've pushed past, and that's the interesting thing. And I think that I know there are people who are listening right now who perhaps have never even made it over the front door. And it's trying to say to that person, if you're listening, it is doable.
It's out there. I mean, look. I mean, obviously, every place they must have a local sight loss group. I mean, that's literally. I moved down in March, and I was really proactive. I found a group called Open Sight, and from Open Sight, I met Dave, who runs the charity, the local charity, and then from there, I got on the cricket, and I say, all my friends now are sight impaired, and you know, I have no sighted friends. All my friends are blind. You know, that's how it's come, and I don't mind. You know, and they're good friends. You know, yeah.
Don't push back. Don't push back. Is that your message?
That's it. You know, you can still do things. I mean, you can't. I mean, you don't have to jump out of a plane, for instance, but you can get out there, like try activities. If you're not sporty, you can go on walks with other people, with guides. You know, if you want to take up running, there's local places that would have guide runners that you would join with. You know, there's lots of things around there. You've got to be proactive, and I'm sure, I know it's a postcode lottery and everyone hasn't got the best services depending on where they live, but I'm sure every county has a sight loss charity organisation that's not R&IB, but you know, that you can get out. Or if not, start, if there is nothing in your area, then start one. You know, my friend Dave Taylor, he was a security guard. He started doing his site, and within 8 months, he got a registered charity sponsored. You know, got this run by the National Lottery. He got a grant from them as well, so it can be done.
Yeah, but I must say though, jumping out of that plane must have been fun.
I wouldn't do it again. I mean, I've done it now.
Would you not?
No, that's it. It's just the initial tumble, and then you're gliding down, which is lovely, and then your ears pop, and then you come in there. But it was. I mean, there is. For the people that can see slightly, I am on YouTube. Just put in Clark Reynolds skydiving, and I'm obviously the first link on there. And you'll see the whole 10 minutes. So there's an interview at the start saying about the charity, me going up in the plane, me coming out of the plane, and me landing. Yeah.
Oh, sounds great. It sounds great, but also terrifying, and I'll probably never do it. But I'll happily watch you doing it. Just a brief note on your work you're doing now, because I think this is quite interesting, and it follows on from your career. You've taken that as a positive as well, even though your career you couldn't continue. Mm. You're trying to help others get into this world of, is it just art generally, is it model making?
Once I self moved and settled, I'm going to go for the British Arts Council for a grant, and that will help me get these workshops up and running. So basically, I think I like visual, like, even though I can't see, I still like painting. I've always done painting and stuff like that. So, you know, like when chefs, when they do those funky menus, and they use that dry ice, and they have a perfume in it to enhance the flavour of the food, because you have that smell.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of theory. So, for instance, if we were doing the still life, So like an orange. So we would have an orange. Everyone would taste that orange. Everyone would feel the orange. And then I would have some Foley sounds, which is basically sounds that enhance through movies. So someone of chopping an orange, squeezing an orange. And we would have the whole atmosphere. And then the little spray, like a little canister of like perfume, we can get the like orange essence, and we'd be, I'll spray it in there, just in front of their face, so they can smell that intensity of the orange. And then I'll ask them, you know, what if they've never known a colour before, what colours, you know, what would that represent, like of an orange, what feelings that make. And then we get the orange, and then we just splatter. We'll have these balls, and we'll splatter the paint and create abstract art through sensory overload. So, I think art is a great therapy. I mean, for all the, you know, not just for sight loss, but I think for any you look at any disability, and obviously they do it in prison as well. And I know the army people with sight loss, they run an art class up in Brighton for veterans, blind veterans. They do.
Well, it sounds amazing. I can't wait to hear the rest of your story, because I think there's more to come from you on this.
Yeah.
Clark, really good to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming onto the programme.
That's okay, thank you.
Great to hear his story. And if you want to share your experiences, your story, whatever it might be, whether it's good, bad or downright ugly, tell us about it. You can email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Later on in the programme, we're going to hear from one woman whose experience of losing her sight was quite frankly horrific, but it's something she has tried to make positive. Hear Catherine Pugh's story a little bit later here on The Weekly Connect. Now, did you know that there's a new show all about blind people in Wales? It's called The Welsh Connection, and it's hosted by Lynn Morgan. She spoke to Jill Barclay to tell her all about the new programme.
Hi Jill, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you very much. Now tell us about this fantastic new programme that's coming up.
Well, it's called The Welsh Connection, as you mentioned earlier, and it does what it says on the tin, which is basically taking a look at what's happening in and around Wales and featuring it and highlighting it so people around the country have some idea of what's going on here.
It sounds incredible, it really does, and so important, because I think when you have a visual impairment and you're living in a certain part of the country, you can wonder about other people living around the UK and wonder what they're getting up to and what is available to them, what facilities, that kind of thing. So it's great that you're highlighting this and bringing it to our attention.
Well, I'm very excited about it all, because I've been meeting some very interesting people who are sort of, you know, carrying on with their everyday lives, but perhaps are doing something a little bit extra, like many others. But as you just said, you know, it is interesting to find out what people in other parts of the country are doing. Health is a devolved issue, as you know. So I'm finding out how the government here is planning their healthcare provision, and obviously finding out really about people's lives.
Well, speaking of which, you've been speaking to one incredible woman who has developed a real love for travel.
That's right. Hilary Lester, she's just an amazing lady. So chatty, so full of fun. And as you just said, she loves travelling and has become, perhaps I would like to say, a bit of an ambassador for Travel Eyes. But it's so important to sort of, you know, have that outward looking viewpoint on life. And she's been on quite a few journeys with them. And this is just one thing she told me about a trip to Romania.
Because it was right out in the middle of the countryside, a few of us used to go out after dinner in the evening just for a stroll. And one night, because it was so clear, I was actually able to see a couple of stars. And for me, that was, I'm getting emotional now with it, but it was fantastic.
So that was Hilary Lester talking about a trip to Romania, but she's been on many trips and tells me in The Welsh Connection about her travels and how important they are to her.
You know, travelling is one thing that a lot of people wonder why I bothered continuing after I lost my sight. And I just love the different ambience, the different smells of a country, the different sounds. You know, it's not always to do with sight. So, you know, she's obviously enjoying her travels in a very different way. But she sounded emotional there when it came to kind of looking at the stars. And you know, it sounds like a beautiful piece. It really does. You've also been talking about some of the sports that go on around Wales as well.
That's right. I've been down to Swansea, which is about an hour away from Cardiff, just to find out what they've been doing in some VI tennis sessions there, and spoke to a great bloke called Sean Donovan.
I've always loved sport, and a couple of years ago I was looking for a sport that could help me become more physically active, and I saw there was VI tennis sessions happening here in Swansea in the R&IB newsletter, so I decided to come down and take part. My sight loss was through a brain tumour I had when I was young, and damaged my optic nerves while it was growing in the location it was in my brain, and as a result the surgeons had to damage and cut away a little bit of the optic nerve, which meant I had sight loss, and now I can't see a lot of things to my left hand side of my eyes. So unless you're standing either on my right or directly in front of me, I won't be able to see you. So that's basically been my sight loss since I was 8 years old.
So that was Sean Donovan, a bit breathy because I just caught him in between his training sessions. But he was talking about how important it is to remain physically active for him, and VI Tennis has given him an amazing opportunity.
Do you know, I used to play tennis all the time when I was a youngster and a teenager, and I loved it so much. And it's the one thing that I keep thinking, gosh, I should really try and get involved in that again. So it'll be very interesting to hear Sean's story and you know, what he's up to with the tennis, because it's such a great sport and it keeps you so incredibly fit. I think the other thing I love about this programme is, Lynn, that I get to listen to, well, we all get to listen to the Welsh accent for a full hour. It's beautiful. It's such an amazing accent. So it's really, really lovely that this is coming up.
Well, it's very nice to hear you say that. And obviously there are lots of different accents around Wales, and hopefully, you know, you'll be hearing from the north, south, east and the west. And one lady who from North Wales who's joining me regularly on the programme is Fionn Miles. So she is going to blog for me every week, and she likes an adventure too. So she's talking about all different things. When she went with sailing with the Jubilee Trust, she's recently returned from a convention, funnily enough, in Scotland, in Inverness, because she's a massive Outlander fan, and all the things that she gets up to. She's keeping me fully updated through every programme.
Well, Lynn, when can we hear this masterpiece? When is it coming out?
Well, I don't know about masterpiece, but hopefully it'll be an enjoyable hour. So you'll be able to hear it at 6 p.m. on Wednesday, beginning Wednesday the 4th of October. And then you can catch up with it again then on Saturday at 4 p.m. So Wednesdays at 6 and Saturdays at 4.
With the fabulous Lynn Morgan from our R&IB Connect Radio studio in Cardiff. Lynn, very best of luck with the show. I look forward to hearing it very, very much. And thank you so much for joining us here in the programme today.
Thank you, Jill.
And you can listen to The Welsh Connection fortnightly on R&IB Connect Radio. Check out the R&IB Connect Radio website for more details. All you have to do is go to rnibconnectradio.org.uk. There's also a podcast version of the show coming soon as well. More details on all of that coming soon.
Join R&IB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free, and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect Magazine, our monthly membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded blind and partially sighted people, friends, families and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from a dedicated R&IB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join R&IB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555.
RNIB is pleased to partner with Mail Plus to produce the UK's first professionally recorded newspaper magazine. Weekend Magazine is now available in audio for RNIB newsagent and Mail Plus subscribers. The Daily Mail is the first newspaper to have come on board, and we hope many more will follow. RNIB are working in partnership with many publications to ensure accessibility for all. So to receive your free trial, call our helpline on 0303 123 9999, email helpline@rnib.org.uk, or visit the website rnib.org.uk/reading-choices to find out more.
The
Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Time now to find out what's going on here at RNIB. This week at RNIB, the charity wants blind and partially sighted people to help shape the future of eye health services in England. MPs are currently taking part in an all-party group for eye health, which is considering how to deal with capacity problems within eye clinics amid claims this is leading to people losing their sight when it could be saved. RNIB campaigns manager Jessica Hall says people have the opportunity to get involved.
The APPG wants to hear from patients, their families and carers who have experience of using eye care services, and you can have your say by getting in touch and completing a patient survey. The APPG are going to use the findings to make recommendations to the government and the NHS, commissioners and STPs, which could deliver real change for patients' eye health and the delivery of eye care. So we really want to encourage you to get involved if you're a patient or you have a relative who's using local eye care services to ensure that your experiences are taken into account. You simply have to go to www.surveymonkey.co.uk/r/APPG-inquiry.
And Jessica says RNIB is always on the lookout for new members and new volunteers who would like to get involved with the future of the charity.
At RNIB, our ambition is to make the world a better place for people who are affected by sight loss. And we believe that by coming together as a connected community and using our collective voice, we can achieve our goal of a better world where people are included, they're equal and independent.
The RNIB wants blind and partially sighted people to help them prepare future campaigns and projects and influence how they are portrayed to the public at large. They've launched a new scheme called Playing Your Part, which encourages people to get more involved with the charity's decision-making and how it affects the visually impaired community across the country. Full details are available on rnib.org.uk. Natalie Swiderska from the charity says it's all about helping RNIB help their members.
Some of the great things we're trying to do now is, as we're sort of developing our ideas around some of our publications or around some of our public campaigns, so the things that went out recently on Channel 4, we want to be able to get in touch with a few people before we do that to say, you know, what do you think about it? Is there anything we could do differently? What do you think of the messages? Is it on point? So, yeah, we're hoping to bring more of that to the community before we actually do it, so we can make sure that it's all relevant, it's interesting, it hits the nail.
RNIB is looking for suggestions from blind and partially sighted people from all over the country to create a brand new sensory garden. The charity has been invited to create the new garden for the forthcoming Hampton Court Flower Show, which takes place in late 2018. Leading gardener Steve Dimmock says they want to involve everyone.
It's really an idea to sort of enhance blind and partially sighted people's lives with somewhere pleasant, relaxing, stress-free to go. And we can do the garden at Hampton Court and then hopefully move it on to somewhere else so it can get used afterwards. But it's also an idea for what people can do with their own gardens.
Anyone with ideas or suggestions for the garden should email radio@rnib.org.uk entitled Garden for All. Steve says there have already been some excellent suggestions.
The initial kind of thoughts that we've had from talking to your colleagues at the RNIB down here about what might be a nice thing to do is to get some feeling of people being included and not alone. So I've got this idea of having different paths coming into a central sort of area, and the paths would be different lengths, so they denote the different time spans of people going blind. So you could have a tiny little short path for somebody instantly affected by an accident, or a long winding path that denotes somebody that's got a degenerative type of illness that's going to send them blind over a longer period of time, but all meeting together in the middle for a sort of a seating area where everybody can get together.
And that's this week at RNIB. Are you frustrated by the lack of accessibility in everyday technology? Maybe it's cookers, maybe it's washing machines, or maybe it's your television. Well, that's where the charity Rika comes in.
Well, hello, my name is Chris Lofthouse. I'm the outreach manager at Rika. Rika is a consumer research charity, which means we involve disabled people in consumer research. And we have a panel. It's called the Rika Watch panel, which is made up of people of all ages and disabilities, including blind and partially sighted people, from all over the UK. We have 700 members at the moment, but we really need some more people to join us.
The charity is perhaps better known to you as Rikeability, the former name of the research group who publish reports on the accessibility of consumer goods. The charity invites people from all walks of life to get involved in their research. Elizabeth Jones is one such person.
I get involved when I'm invited along to do some of their research work. One that sticks in my mind is the cooker research. It came about, I agreed, because I'm thinking of buying a new cooker. I wanted a cooker that would be adaptable for blind people with buttons, bump-ons, things like that, so that they can be identified to allow you to cook easily with possibly some audio on it. So it culminated with me going along with Eric one day, and we researched four companies, all manufacturing or selling cookers. We were able to talk to the managers and tell them, get an explanation of the cookers that they then had in store, and to tell them what we expected from a cooker and could they supply it. We didn't really get anywhere near what we wanted, but left it with the management to research and come up with their suppliers and manufacturers to see if they could produce such a thing.
Chris Lofthouse from Rika says it's a great opportunity for people to get involved and share their views and opinions on accessible technology. For example, white goods.
We'll contact people. We match people with the research. So the cookers research was very interesting because we got a group of blind and partially sighted people to look at the features of cookers, to research what is on the market and produce a buying guide based upon these people's experiences. And I think that's the key thing, that it's the consumer passing on tips and how to find out about products and services for other people. We pay people for their time and involvement.
Chris says while it might not become a full-time job for someone, it's important to play your part.
As we know, things are pretty fragmented, and we get work on a project-by-project basis, but it's very important that we involve real people with real-life experiences, and that's where the Riker Watch panel comes in. So I really urge people to consider joining us. They can join online or they can phone us up.
Elizabeth Jones says she's proud to represent the charity and support such an inclusive message.
Riker does a really, really good job in trying to bring to the fore the needs of visually impaired people in the way of tactile and talking products, bringing them to the market, identifying them, and obviously addressing the needs of these people. There'd be nobody as a minder for us. They do act as a sort of minder, because they're already reminding the companies what they should be doing to give accessible format to all people, which is complying with the law these days. It's enjoyable from the point of view that you're doing a service to those who can't help themselves. Blind people, when they're given the certificate of visual impairment and told they're going to go and blind and lose their sight, oh my God, what am I going to do? They go indoors, they sit there. They're told someone might come along and help them in 3 weeks' time. But the rehab services, social services, are short of people, and they may not see anybody for months. And they're left in a state of being remote and isolated. And by the time that someone does come along to help them, they're too far gone to want to go outside because they've lost touch with the outside world. And the fear, they can't overcome their fear of going out. That's basically what happens.
The charity works with a wide range of companies and has had some notable successes, as Chris explains.
We did work with British Gas on their Hive 2 thermostat. We actually tested it at the product design stage. at the stage they were going to listen to us. And we got partially sighted people to give feedback on how easy to use it was in terms of tactile, in terms of the colour contrast of the lettering. And at that point, they listened to us, changed the design of this product to improve it. And that's the key thing, that if we don't get representation to improve products and services, things will be worse than they already are. I mean, we know that things are pretty fragmented and it's quite difficult to find information. So when Riker gets projects, we can really improve things at a particular time. And we need people with a wide range of disabilities and visual impairments for us to use to match when we're called upon to do a research project. So it's vital that the consumer, the person with the practical knowledge, is involved, and we can facilitate that as Riker.
So how can we get involved?
Well, they can go online to our website, which is www.riker.org, because we're a charity, .uk. So I'll repeat that, riker.org.uk. Or they can phone us up, 020-7427-2460. I'll just repeat that again, 020-7427-2460. Ask about the Riker Watch panel and joining. We can send information out in large print, and we can also register people over the telephone, or people can register online.
Member of Riker, Elizabeth, says everyone should get involved.
I would recommend it, because what they've done so far has been successful. Otherwise, they wouldn't still be in existence. So that speaks for itself, that it's a very reputable and vibrant organisation to belong to. And of course, it's an asset if you're on the panel, because you get to be involved in things that you experience from day to day that you can't solve for yourself, and you've got someone to talk to. Obviously, more people make life easier, because they pick up the ideas and we go from there, and that's how we improve the situation. Not only if you improve it for yourself, you're improving it for everybody else. But that's what Riker does.
RNIB in your pocket. Your accessible local newsagent and library, delivered to your pocket. Reading can make a world of difference to your enjoyment of life, which is why we're excited to launch RNIB in your pocket. Designed to make reading the latest newspapers, magazines and books easier, it comes with a subscription to RNIB Newsagent and access to Talking Books, giving you an unbeatable reading package at just £20 per month. With voice control, In Your Pocket is easy to use, fuss-free and great for on the go. No more waiting for the postman, just say, "Read me The Guardian," and In Your Pocket will oblige. RNIB Newsagent provides daily, weekly and monthly newspapers and magazines. And Talking Books provides you with access to over 25,000 books, all of which can be accessed via In Your Pocket with one voice command. To find out more or register for RNIB In Your Pocket, please call our helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email us at helpline@rnib.org.uk.
The Weekly Connect.
The Weekly Connect.
On RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, earlier I spoke to Clark Reynolds about his positive experience in life despite losing his sight. And it seems he's not alone. Despite suffering horrific injuries, Catherine Pugh has tried to make the best of her life. In this first of a two-part series, Jill Barclay spoke to her to find out more about her incredible and harrowing story.
In 2013, whilst on holiday in France, Catherine Pugh experienced a horrific accident that left her with 96% burns to her body. Doctors gave her a 1 in 1,000 chance of survival. And after in excess of 200 operations, Catherine joins me now to tell us her incredible story. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us here on the programme today. Now, you lost your sight 3 years ago due to a horrific accident. Can you tell us a bit about that?
So when I was 19 years old, I just spent 5 months out in a ski resort in France. We were on the coach on the way home, and I was actually involved in a crash. I was left with 96% burns, and I was put into an induced coma for 3 months. And then I woke up from the induced coma, and I remember I wasn't able to see things properly. There was no actual damage from the fire to my eyes. I ended up with damage to my optic nerve, which was a side effect of being in the induced coma and almost losing my life on quite a number of occasions.
It's an absolutely incredible story, Catherine. It really, really is, because you were given a 1 in 1,000% chance of survival. And in fact, you're the oldest person alive that has survived burns to this extent. I mean, the only part of you that wasn't burnt were the soles of your feet and your scalp.
Yeah, I mean, I still find it quite difficult to believe how I managed to get through it, to be honest. You know, you hear stories like this in the news, and it's not something you ever think is going to be related to your life or your own life. So it was difficult, but I've been very, very lucky. Circumstances seem to fall on my favor during my recovery, during the initial accident. And so I've been very lucky because of all of that, and I ended up in fantastic hands of surgeons in a hospital that was absolutely amazing. So yeah, I still count myself lucky.
You're just remarkable. You really, really are. Your attitude is so incredibly positive, considering what you have been through. Because, you know, I know people have asked you at the time, what did it actually feel like? Your whole body was on fire. And, you know, the pain was just everywhere, wasn't it? It was excruciating. And yet it was numb.
Do you know what? Being on fire, it's the hardest thing to describe. And obviously, I would not wish it on anyone else, because it was excruciating. The easiest way I can describe it is it's like when you get stung. It's like being stung by hundreds of millions of bees or something. But then also when you get pins and needles, the after effect of pins and needles, when you just go completely numb, it's a combination of both. And yet it's extremely difficult to imagine. And not that I would want anyone to imagine it, because it wasn't very nice. And unfortunately, I was awake for being on fire and the 2 hours afterwards when I was waiting for paramedics and things to get to us. So I remember it all. It wasn't very good at all.
Oh, I can't even begin to imagine, Catherine. I really, really can. And obviously, you know, I have no sight at all. I was 19 also when I lost my sight, but in a far less traumatic way. I was, you know, diagnosed with diabetes as a baby. So it eventually got to my eyes, something that I knew that could happen one day. It's just it happened a little bit sooner than anticipated. But for you, at the age of 19, being out, you know, for a ski season, I mean, I used to ski. I was actually living in Switzerland when I lost my sight. I'd gone over there to work. And, you know, you're kind of on the threshold of your youth, your life, your career. Everybody's going off and travelling the world and doing their own thing, going to university. It must have been absolutely horrendous having to start a new life all over again, almost, but with all these operations to go through. I mean, you had 200 operations.
Yeah, so I think we're about at just over 200 operations and procedures now. So yeah, when I think about it like that, it is, as you say, something traumatic happening, whether it was getting my burns, someone losing their sight, you know, anything, losing a parent, could be anything. That happening as a young adult, it is difficult, because you're sort of in the time of your life when you start learning what you want to do and you start adventuring on your hopefully future life. And it kind of means that I did have to start again. Obviously, when I woke up and all of this was happening, it was kind of like the last 19 years sort of got blown away, so that I was having to start again. I was really lucky. I still have my peripheral vision, so I still have some vision. So I didn't have to deal with, you know, complete sight loss, as well as the burns and the scars and things. But it was difficult, and it still is now. Like today, I'm 23 now, and I have watched all my friends go through and finish university. I've watched them, you know, start jobs, and, you know, some are even starting to get married and things like that. You know, you do watch and think, oh, what could it have been for me if this hadn't happened? But that kind of thinking, you know, you can't change the past. And I try not to think in that way at all. I try to think more like the opportunities I've had because this has happened, and the things I've learned and the person I've become, those are all good things, and that's kind of what I try to hold on to.
I suppose in many respects, sometimes you're left with no choice, because I know personally, I sat in a chair for a while in between operations, waiting for things to happen, waiting for my sight to come back, which it never did. And I used to think, why me? Why me? And then it was one day, it was like an epiphany. It just kind of came to me, why not me? Why not me? I think once you get your head around that, you really have to kind of start thinking about how you're going to live the rest of your life. And that's certainly, you know, what I endeavour to do at the time. But you're saying that 96% of your body was burned. How did that leave the physical appearance of your skin?
Yeah, so I visibly look very, very different to a regular everyday gym or whatever. but yeah, so I am scarred pretty much everywhere. Very luckily, as my scalp didn't get burnt, I still have hair. So, you know, that is a bonus, because it means I've got my own hair, I've got eyebrows and things. But everywhere else, I am very scarred. I lost all of the fingertips on my left hand. My hand is obviously disfigured and it looks very different. Also, I suffered with extra neurological problems. So my right hand doesn't straighten. It stays in sort of a claw position. And then the rest of me is scarred. So all kinds of different scars. I have discoloration. So obviously scarring can become white. It can be very red. I always say it's kind of like I'm multicolored, because I've got red in some places. I go purple if I'm really cold, and I have white patches all over me. And it's very interesting. I've learned to love them. And I've learned to be confident in myself and the way I look. You know, I'll happily go out with my friends in a vest top and a dress, and I am happy to do that, and I feel confident. I know, and I'm quite aware, that people will do double takes at me, and they will stare simply because it's something different that they're seeing. And it's usually not, you know, in a malicious way at all. People are just generally curious, and I do get stares and I do get looks. But for me, I know what I've been through, and the way that my skin looks is simply a reminder and kind of like a map of the journey that I've been on, I guess. So yeah, I do look very different, but I have learned to sort of deal with it, and I have my down days. This makes me sound like, you know, I'm upbeat all the time. I have down days, but luckily the good days outweigh those.
Do you know, you do have your down days. I mean, I have my down days still, and I'm 21 years blind. Now, I, like you, was 19 when I lost my sight, and it was at an age where I kind of felt, you know, everybody was out trying to kind of pursue relationships as well. And all of a sudden, I felt very unattractive, because I thought, who would ever want me now that I can't see, because I'm different and I'm not the Jill I was, and, you know, nobody's going to want me as a partner. And, you know, nothing could be further from the truth, because you learn as you go along. But you must have had those thoughts as well. You know, will my appearance detract from me having relationships in the future? Or, you know, is that something that did go through your mind?
Yeah, of course. And it's still something I think of today. You know, I'm still like, I'm not in a relationship now. And obviously, I've spent the last 4 years, I've, you know, gone on dates and things, but I still think it today. And that it's kind of a thought that a lot of people have, even if they don't have a difference. I always try and look at things in the way that is going to be easiest to cope or deal with it. But yeah, of course, I've had thoughts like that. And the fact that, you know, why would someone want to sort of take me on, if that makes sense? In the beginning, I used to think, oh, why would anyone want to take on this massive task of being there for me and caring for me if I ever need caring for after an operation and things? But as you say, you know, you learn to, I think, over time, when you are able to love yourself and love the things about yourself that are different, it is very, very easy for other people to. And also, I would say that I have learned that personality, I know that it's when you're a teenager, you know, people say personality counts more than the way you look, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it really is the person that you are on the inside that makes you the person that you are. And I found over the last 4 years, especially, that I have learned that that is very, very important. And it's something that I always try to keep in mind if I ever do feel, you know, insecure in a situation or anything like that.
I think, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, for so long, I kind of struggled with my self-esteem. And I do still from time to time, because I don't have a clue what I look like now compared to what I looked like 21 years ago. And people say I haven't changed, and people say I have changed. And, you know, some people even say my makeup's better. I mean, you know, which is a laugh in itself. But I think that what you're saying about the personality is so incredibly true. And, you know, I couldn't tell you what any of my boyfriends have looked like since I lost my sight. I can't tell you what my husband looks like. All I can tell you is that I have always gone for the personality. And it's almost like not being able to judge a book by its cover anymore. You're kind of reading the book first before judging what that cover is to you. And it's getting to know somebody from the inside out, which actually is quite a beautiful thing in itself. Now, I'm not saying that there's not a day goes by where I wish I couldn't see again. And I'm sure, you know, there's days where you think or wish this hadn't happened to you. But it is what it is, isn't it? And you have to go on with it and live your life in the best possible way you can.
Yeah, and I think that outlook, it's so great to have. And, you know, when all this happened, I didn't have that outlook to begin with. And it's not something that sort of happened overnight. I have had to work hard towards having this positive sort of outlook and trying to look at all of the positives rather than the negatives, or as many as I can. But it is there. You can get there. And to have, you know, support around you, and to allow people to be there for you and support you as well, is just as important. Because, you know, it's very easy when something bad happens to sort of push people away because of whether, you know, you feel like you're a burden or you feel like it's too much for somebody else to deal with, because, you know how hard it is to deal with yourself. It's a very good outlook to have. And I always try to be positive, and in the beginning thought I was a burden to my family and things and friends and even a relationship, because one of my friends pulled me off the coach. He was the guy that actually saved my life. And I pushed him away because it hurt him to see me, you know, things like that. But now I sort of, I try to be my best self. And if anything, I would say that what's happened to me has probably made me not a nicer person, but it's made me have different morals and different outlooks and different ideas. And I think that that's sort of a gift in itself.
And we'll hear from Catherine on next week's programme. In the meantime, that's it for the Weekly Connect this week. Tune in next week for more. And don't forget, you can add your story as well. Email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. We would love to hear from you. It's your show. Get in touch. And remember, when it's Mondays from 1, it is the Weekly Connect. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.